Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the second Monday of every month, it must be Law Talk. And it is sponsored by Right Now, or Hyten and Lewis. And in studio, we have Scott Wakefield. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome. This is great because this is, at first, a very interesting topic. I thought, this is going to be a topic that by first appearance, a lot of consumers may say, well, what is that? But it's perfect because this does impact consumers about utilities, rates, the rates with utilities. And you are an expert in that area, at least with your experience. So, of course, you served 10 years as chief counsel at the state of Arizona's Residential Utility Consumer Office. That's a long time. Why don't you describe a little bit what that meant, what you did, and how that can relate to consumers?
Okay. I was, like you said, I was chief counsel for the state's Residential Utility Consumer Office. And in Arizona, the Arizona Corporation Commission regulates most of the public utilities, including Arizona Public Service, Southwest Gas, Quest, the phone company, lots of water companies throughout the state, other electric companies in Tucson and other parts of the state, sewer companies, so all the those kinds of utilities are regulated by the Corporation Commission.
Even waste management?
No, not waste not management.
Them. Okay.
No. Water, sewer, gas, electric, telephone.
Gotcha.
So, and the process by which they regulate them includes setting of rates, and so the legislature created the Residential Utility Consumer Office to participate in those proceedings before the commission to advocate on behalf of residential customers to ensure that they're treated fairly in the process, that they are treated fairly in the outcomes, so that they have representation, because some of the larger customer groups, whatnot, could afford to have their own representation in those proceedings, mining interests and things like that. And so to make sure there was a balance, the legislature created the Residential Utility Consumer Office. And so I was involved with rate cases for Southwest Gas, Arizona Public Service, Quest, many others for the 10 years that I was there. And now in public practice, in private practice, I continue to appear before the Corporation Commission in rate cases and other regulatory proceedings that the commission has.
And you 7 years at the Arizona Corporation Commission in the securities division and a hearing officer. Tell us a little bit about that.
That was fun work at the securities division. I prosecuted investment securities fraud, and there's always sort of the fraud du jour that changes from time to time over what's interesting. Actually, when I was there, investments in ostriches were kind of a little fad that went on for a while.
Really?
And I became quite the little expert on ostriches and what was true about them, what was just, maybe misrepresentations that were being given to investors about returns that they can get from investing in these programs.
So did you deal a lot with the SEC?
We were essentially the state equivalent of the SEC, so we did work with them, and sometimes we would initiate an investigation that they would step in on because it was larger than just a single state.
That's interesting. Ostrich. The only time I've seen an ostrich was in a movie called Sideways. Did you ever see that movie?
I don't recall if I did or not.
Paul Giamatti and Donald Church, someone. What was his last name? But anyway, that was... Oh, yeah, David Hayden Church. That's right. And that was awesome. And there are ostrich farms in a place called Solvang. Ever hear of that place up in California?
Yes, I've been in Solvang once or twice. There actually, Arizona was a nice environment for ostrich raising, and that's particularly why we saw some of those issues coming up here in Arizona. In southern Arizona, just outside of Tucson, as you drive down Interstate 10, there's an ostrich farm. And other locations in southern Arizona, there were a number of places that people were breeding ostriches, and so we saw some of that
really?
in a heyday maybe about 15 years ago.
So what? Now you got me curious. What are some of the issues, if you're allowed to say, that pertain to prosecuting this situation, ostrich? I mean, what was
well,
that?
Well, with using ostriches as an example, for instance, if you just went out and bought an ostrich and had it on, you know, maybe you have horse property and you were permitted to have that kind of livestock on your property, and you just bought an ostrich and then turned around and sold it or sold its offspring, that wouldn't be an investment that would be regulated by the Corporation Commission. But if someone offered you an investment in, hey, I have a group of ostriches, and you can have sort of a share of this group, and then we share the profits, and so you don't really need to do anything, you can just make a passive investment of money, then that can trigger investment securities laws that would require perhaps registration of the investment with the commission. It would require you to comply with certain requirements about not making misrepresentations or fraud. So if you were making claims about how much money you could make off ostriches and those were based on unrealistic projections, or if you were trying to scam people into putting in money by making something look better than it really was, then you could have some problems with the Securities Division of the Commission.
So what do you do with an ostrich anyway? I mean, is that something you, is it like something you cook? Or?
Well, they said that it would become popular as a meat.
Is that right?
You know, I haven't seen it on every menu
like many people were
projecting, but there have been a time or two I have seen it on a menu, actually.
Really?
They say it's very healthy meat compared to other red meat, that it's probably more like chicken in terms of its healthiness, but I think it has a texture and a feel a little bit more of beef. So they thought that there might be some high demand for it.
So where do I invest? I'm kidding. Okay. Wow, that's interesting. I had no idea. I think I've seen ostrich races, though.
Well, Chandler had a history where they used to have ostriches in the early days of Chandler, and so they still, as part of their annual Chandler Ostrich Festival, have ostrich races every March.
That's interesting. That is see the movie Sideways. I think you'll really enjoy it. They did talk about ostriches in that movie. So, but the most important thing is it appears at this point is what you're doing now, and of course that's helping consumers with any issues. I suspect, is it any issues with public utilities or
well, issues that come before the Corporation Commission. For instance, one of my clients is a homeowners association in a neighborhood that's been affected by the smell of a sewer plant that's located close by. Mm. And they're trying to get the sewer plant shut down. And so they came to the commission and participated in proceedings before the commission in order to try and accomplish that goal of getting the sewer plant shut down so they didn't have to deal with the odors any longer.
Wow. Now, how could that even be, though? How would they put a sewer plant near, I guess, a community where the sewer, well, you may not be able to say too much, but I'm just curious, is it it's something that the sewer plant, or let's say hypothetical, they didn't do something so the odors would sort of come by, or was it just a mistake to locate the sewer plant? I guess I'm assuming the sewer plant came second. Maybe the community came first.
The community came second in this instance. That largely the sewer company or the sewer plant was there. And then since that was placed there, lots of homes have come in close by.
That makes it tougher, isn't it? Like, people beware. I mean, they already knew there's a sewer plant, or maybe the developers. Is that a problem maybe from a legal aspect with the developer placing it there and maybe not disclosing it to the individual homeowners?
There could potentially be some issues there with real estate disclosure laws that would require you to disclose something like that. Now, those requirements haven't always existed, and so I think in this instance, the homes were put in, and there weren't. I'm not aware that there were any misrepresentations or failures of representations from any developers. Today, if something like that were to happen, there might be some requirements for disclosure to homeowners as to exactly how close. In addition, the county's requirements and the state's requirements about how much of a setback you need between a residential property and a sewer plant are now much greater than they were 30 or 40 years ago. And, you know, utility plant lasts a long time. We make investments and we expect that plant to continue to be operating for, you know, decades and decades. So oftentimes the nature of a community can change over the time that the utility plant is continuing to serve customers.
So that can impact value and a whole lot of different things. That could be a lot of issues.
There could be. Now, you know, not all of those issues have a remedy or have a remedy in front of the Corporation Commission. My area of practice is primarily in the proceedings before the commission and seeking whatever remedy or fair outcomes that the commission can authorize.
So was there a fair outcome, or is that still
the matter's still pending.
Oh, so. Wow. So that would be an interesting. I'm going to have to keep up on that in the newspaper. That especially that the community came second. That to me seems the interesting fact there.
Yeah,
it would seem like
it is interesting. You know, a lot of the people said that they weren't aware that the plant was located so close by. And the other interesting fact in this instance is that there isn't actually any. Apparently, there is no violation by the utility company in operating that plant the way it's operating, and they are complying with all their environmental requirements from the county and the state.
Wow.
And so it's a little trickier to find a way to get that plant removed or shut down when it's not in violation or appears to not be in violation of any environmental requirements.
Hope the developers have insurance. Okay, just kidding. I don't know. To me, you're buying a house, that's a big investment. I would think like you'd want to know what's around the surrounding areas, right?
Well, and that's why the real estate disclosure laws have been beefed up over the years.
Wow, that's very interesting. You got an interesting job.
It has its interesting points to it, yes.
Now, are you representing the utility company or the developers?
In that instance, I represent the Homeowners Association.
Oh, that's right. You did say that. Oh, that's interesting. Wow. So, well, let us know how that turns out. That is sort of cool. Now, I see you went to Arizona State University, ASU. I know a lot about your firm because I love your firm. Right now, are Hyten and Lewis. About this time, by the way, I always give a shout-out to Carol, your receptionist, because she is phenomenal. Best receptionist, hands down, I've ever seen.
She's great. She's a lot of fun. Actually, she's on vacation right now. So
really?
Unless she's listening online, she's not going to hear
your
shout-out. But I'll tell her you said it.
Yeah. Well, she's awesome. I mean, that's a tough position, and she does it with such joy. And it's just remarkable how she can maintain that state of mind for the whole day. And every day too.
Yeah, she is. She's always got a smile on her face, and she's always she always even looks as happy as she sounds on the phone.
So. It is phenomenal. I give her the employee award of the year, maybe the century. Okay, at least a decade. But ASU, I know there's controversy there. Not controversy, but when it comes to sports, you got the U of A guys like Bill Ridenour. You also have ASU people, and you have some Iowa and other people, too. So how does the office get along like that?
Well, we kid each other a lot. I sit in between two of the U of A guys. And so, I'm not really as much of a sports guy, but the sports people do kind of get into it with each other a little bit, just some lighthearted fun.
It is lighthearted because it's such a great firm. 30 years being a CPA, this is by far the best law firm I have ever seen. And you know what makes it great? This is just from my perspective, is not only technically you guys are phenomenal, but it's your customer service and really the heart and soul of everyone. That you're just really fair. You redefine what the stereotype, you know, attorney is. CPAs have stereotypes, attorneys do. And you guys are just really so fair and just have a lot of compassion, and you guys are technically great.
Well, thanks. You know, I think we all really love what we do, and we respect, you know, the professional field that we're in.
Yeah.
But we recognize that we're there to serve our customers, our clients that have real legal needs, and so we want to help them have those needs met in an efficient way.
And you guys absolutely do. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Scott Wakefield from Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis, and we're going to talk more about public utilities and rates and a whole bunch of different issues, and we'll be right back.
Are you able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. This is Law Talk. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking, and in studio, Scott Wakefield from Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis, a most incredible law firm. I'll keep saying that because that's what I believe. And that's my experience. I've dealt with Jim Hyten, and shout out for Jim, for a long time. He is a phenomenal attorney, just phenomenal. And you sit right in between Jim and Bill, right?
I do.
That is... Jim and Bill, remember that movie? What was that? Something Bill's Amazing Journey or something. Yeah, Bill and Ted's, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have a Ted, so.
Yeah, but we'll have to hire one. Okay, so anyway, we were talking about ASU, but let's get right into it. Public utilities, why don't we give a little bit of a background, like utility rates, who sets the rates, and those type of things, maybe some interesting information, history on the Arizona Corporation Commission. Why don't we start with utility rates? Who sets those rates?
Okay. Well, for like I said earlier, most of the utilities in the state are regulated by the Arizona Corporation Commission, and they regulate. They're a constitutionally based organization. They're created by the Arizona Constitution in Article 15, and currently, there are five commissioners. There used to only be three, but maybe about 8 years ago, 6 years ago, the voters approved a modification to the Constitution to expand that to five commissioners. So there's five commissioners, and the commission has a large staff. In addition to regulating utilities, that's also where you would form a corporation or an LLC. That's another division in the Corporation Commission. As I said earlier, there's securities division that oversees the regulation of investment securities in Arizona. They have a pipeline safety section that regulates the safety of underground gasoline pipes and other kinds of piping. I don't know if you recall a number of years ago, sometimes when there's an explosion, a natural gas explosion, yeah, and whatnot, those issues can arise out of underground piping. And so the commission regulates the safety of that. But the bulk of what they do is the regulation of utilities across the state. And that really impacts every Arizona resident in one way or another, because each of us takes service from at least one regulated utility. In the Phoenix area, APS is regulated by the commission. About half of the valley is customers of Salt River Project. They're not regulated by the commission because they are a district, sort of like a school district, where we, the landowners in the SRP service territory, elect the board of SRP. And so it's that board that sets pricing and policy for the Salt River Project. But the commission regulates Arizona Public Service. They regulate Southwest Gas. They regulate Quest. They regulate Tucson Electric Power and other electric companies throughout the state. And there's over 400 little water companies throughout the state. Most of the customers in Maricopa County are probably receiving the service, water and sewer service from their cities. Those aren't regulated by the commission. But, for instance, in Paradise Valley, there's a privately owned water company. And so the residents of Paradise Valley, their water rates are set by the Corporation Commission.
So what's interesting to me, you were talking about APS regulated pretty much by the Arizona Corporation Commission, but the SRP, not really, a few things, but it's a board of directors, you're saying, or school, like a school board in a way. Does one work better than the other?
Well, you know, in Arizona, whether you're, if you're an SRP customer or an APS customer, your rates are being set by elected officials. And in other states, the equivalent of the Arizona Corporation Commission is often called the Public Utility Commission. And it's not always an elected body. Oftentimes, it's an appointed body that's appointed by the governor, or members could be appointed by legislatures and whatnot. The format is different in different states. But the idea of having the utility regulator being elected and directly accountable to the voters, I think, does provide some important protections for especially the voting customers. Now, there's a whole class of customers that don't vote, and that is the commercial customers, businesses. You know, they have other ways that they may be able to influence elected officials, but not directly at the ballot box. So I think it does provide a level of accountability directly to have those rate setters directly affected by the public rather than appointed by a governor who may be directed.
That's smart. Elected. I like that. So that's a good process. Now, what balance? I might be jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm sort of curious, you know, since rates are regulated or determined, you know, SRP or APS, whatever, by their own, Arizona Corporation Commission with APS at least, and the board with SRP. What's interesting to me is that there must be lenders or investors or, you know, equity capital involved in SRP and APS. Is there a fine balance, a fine line between rates, you know, regulating rates and the return on investment to investors?
Well, there is. And actually, those issues have come up a lot in the APS rate cases over the last 10 years or so, as the utility was concerned about how it was viewed by Wall Street and whether Wall Street viewed it as a sufficiently safe investment, essentially whether its bond rating was investment grade or not. And there have been times where utilities have bond ratings that fall below investment grade, and that can really have a negative impact not only on the investors in the company but even on the customers, because it makes capital more expensive. And at the end of the day, the customers' rates are going to have to compensate for those costs. So it is in investors' and customers' interest to have a utility that's financially healthy enough that it has access to the capital it needs to continue to grow and expand as its customer base may be expanding, or to keep its utility plant current. If you have 50, 60-year-old water pipes, maybe it's time that some of that's going to need to be upgraded or replaced. And if the utility doesn't have access to the capital it needs at a reasonable rate, then at the end of the day, the customer's going to end up paying higher rates because the utility's going to have to find some higher cost sources of capital to make the investments that it needs.
You know, I think that's interesting because as a CPA, I also do a lot of business consulting and Lean and Six Sigma, total quality management. It would seem to me that rates would be, certainly a criteria of what they charge to impact and attract investors, of course. That's just one of them, operating efficiency. I mean, the management teams of these companies. How much would the Arizona Corporation Commission get involved, or even the Arizona Residential Utility Consumer Office, perhaps, get involved in looking at beyond the numbers, but the efficiency of management, the systems they use, like in total quality management, that would also lead to profitability or lack thereof?
It could. It can also affect the quality of service that a utility
offers. Yeah.
For instance, APS operates the nuclear plant, Palo Verde, and a number of years ago there were some concerns by the federal regulators, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, about APS's compliance with all of its requirements. And obviously the Corporation Commission here is also interested in seeing not only that those services being offered safely to the general public, but also, you know, efficiently. We don't want a service to go out. On occasion, there's an odd event like a tree that falls in Washington or Oregon, causing an outage of, you know, the large electric grid across the western portion of the United States. And in July, we're all left without electricity for a number of hours. So there's interests in the reliability of the system that, you know, sometimes there's some unexpected things that might happen. And the commission has been very diligent in the last number of years to every year they bring in the large utility electric companies to come in and assure them that they are going to be able to meet the demand over the upcoming summer when the system is most stressed because the demand is highest. The commission does the same thing with the gas companies for the winter. They ask each of the large gas companies to come in and make a presentation and explain how they know that they will be able to be there on the coldest day of the year, providing as much gas for heating as the customers would demand.
You know, it's interesting too. I'm just thinking, is there like an internal audit that the Arizona Corporation Commission would be able to do on some of these utility companies?
Well, whenever the utility companies want to change their rates, they have to come to the commission and get authorization for that. And that process has become very formalized, and it's what is referred to as a rate case. And essentially, the utility, depending on how large it is, the larger the utility, the more expansive the process is that the commission will go through. But the utility will file an application that can be the paperwork in one single application for an APS could be 8 to 12 inches high for the initial application, where there's all kinds of accounting data, background. Basically, it's set based on the financials. It's the costs to provide the service plus a fair return on the investment and a return of the investment. So there's an extensive audit that the commission will go through. It'll allow other interested parties, such as the Residential Utility Consumer Office, to participate in that proceeding and make recommendations regarding what they think when they review the audit.
Yes, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Scott Wakefield from Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis. This is really interesting about the public utilities and what's behind the scenes. I don't think people know about it. I like it, and we'll be right back.
This is 1010 KXXT.
Prostate cancer has become the most common type among men and is the most diagnosed cancer in the U.S., killing one man every 16 minutes. This disease will strike 3,600 men in Arizona this year. Sadly, 640 will die. One in 31,000 golfers will hit a hole-in-one. One in six will develop prostate cancer. The Southwest Prostate Cancer Foundation was founded in October of 1999 with a mission to mount a public education effort aimed at raising the awareness of the life-saving early screening procedures that dramatically reduce the mortality rate among prostate cancer victims. For more information, contact us at 602-547-3806. And on the web at www.sw-prostatecancer.com. That's www.sw-prostatecancer.com.
Are you earning 8% on your money? Hi, I'm Dan Cochimilio. I can guarantee 8% annual growth for future income. That's right, 8% guaranteed annual growth for future income that you can never outlive. It's your money, money that God has put you in charge of managing. Are you a good steward of your money? How do you know if you are? Do you know if your money is 100% safe from market losses? Is your estate planning as good as it could be? Are you trusting the answers to money questions to a person who doesn't share a Christ-centered worldview? I believe there are people out there who don't care about you you as much as they care about getting your money. I don't operate that way. I offer free consultation and will help you with estate planning and show you how to double or even triple your money for retirement. My purpose is to help you secure your money. It's that simple. So call me, Dan Cochimilio, at 623-825-3900. That number again is 623-825-3900. That's 623-825-3900.
On the web at familyvaluesradio.net. This is 1010 KXXT.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Law Talk, sponsored by Reitnauer, Heitken & Lewis. In studio, Scott Wakefield. And Scott, this is really interesting. You know, it's funny that a lot of people just take things for granted. You know, you have electricity and you have all these conveniences and until you don't. And then they wonder who's running the show. But I like this because you're going into, you know, getting behind the scenes on how these utility companies work. But let's go into some factors impacting utility rates. You want to go into that?
Sure. Well, when the commission sets rates, they're essentially giving the utility rates that will allow it to recover its the fair costs that are necessary to be incurred in order to provide the service, plus a return of the investment that the utility has made in its plant and a return on that investment so that the sources of capital, the investors who put up that money, can get a return on their money. Otherwise, they'll stop investing, and then the capital will dry up, and then there's some negative consequences. So the commission has to look at what is the money that the company has spent, and is that an appropriate amount to have spent on those various things? They try to weed out things that aren't really necessary. You know, one of the things that the commission has sort of struggled with the utilities is salaries and incentive-based compensation for utility employees in order for the utility to incent its employees to be efficient. They oftentimes will have a compensation scheme that provides for, you know, base level compensation plus a certain amount that is based on performance. And oftentimes the commission, you know, is not sure how to handle that, whether they may be of the opinion that, well, if the company doesn't really need to pay that amount of money to incent those employees to do those things, there's no reason that the customers should have to pay that as part of their rates. So incentive-based compensation has been a little tricky for the commission because you don't want too much of the compensation to be just automatic. I mean, there's certainly an interest in having the employees have an incentive to be efficient and to operate the company efficiently. But that's not entirely the way that the commission would necessarily want to incent those customers or those employees.
Is it the public utilities, though, they try to push for incentives?
They often want those incentive-based compensation schemes because they think it can result in a more efficient company.
Sure.
And the regulators oftentimes are saying, well, if you can really hire people for the base salary of X, you know, why do we need to pay them the Y incentive on top of that? I mean, why should customers have to pay that if really X is all it takes to incent those employees to do the work that they need to be done? And the utilities sometimes feel like, well, we can actually get more benefit by giving them a salary that, you know, maybe it's really X minus something that's the base, and then the difference is the incentive, and that's really how we're structuring our rates or our compensation packages.
So would you say the commission is more pro-customer or consumer, or they try to
charge
be in
with,
the middle,
with,
I bet.
With balancing those interests, because you know, it really is it's in the customer's interest that the utility is financially healthy enough that it can continue to provide service.
Yeah.
Because none of us want our utilities to stop providing those services. We need those services. And so the commission is charged with balancing the interests of the utility and the investors in the utility with the interests of the customers, who shouldn't have to pay more than is necessary. But because we don't have the incentives of competition in certain of these markets, we need a regulator to determine what the right rate is to set.
Yeah, because that's a critical part of any community is utilities.
Right.
That could lead to massive chaos. Have you seen that?
Well, you know, when they had blackouts in the Northeast a number of years ago, sometimes there's riots in New York City, in, 40, 50 years ago when there was an electric outage that lasted a long time. And that can turn into a very bad situation for even if only a few hours, you've lost things like the entire electric grid.
That would be bad. I love hockey. Where would I see a hockey game if it was on TV and I couldn't see it? That would be, I'd go live and in person.
Well, I think the ice would be melting, so you probably wouldn't even have a hockey game going on.
That's a good point. You're right. In California, I've heard over certain times they've had what they call rolling blackouts.
That's true. They did a number of summers ago. There were issues about reliability in California. Demand was growing as the economy was growing. Of course, there's increasing demands on the electric system. And California had implemented certain requirements about restrictions on where electric plants were constructed, what kinds of electric plants they would allow. They were largely, environmentally based concerns that led to what some claimed was a lack of sufficient backbone to the system to really meet the growing demand. And so there were times where in California you did see rolling blackouts, and for maybe for an hour or a couple hour period, certain customers were notified in advance, you're likely going to be shut down during this 2 hour period, and then we'll move on to the next neighborhood and we'll shut them down for two hours so that nobody needs to take all of the burden, but everybody will have to take a little bit of brunt of the burden of not having an electric system that really was adequate to meet the demand of its customers. So that's why the regulators are always looking to make sure that there are sufficient resources available to meet the demand as it exists today and as they expect it will exist in the future. It's not like we can always just flip a switch and have the entirety of a new utility plant. It takes years to site and construct a large electric plant. And so the commission and the regulators need to be looking, often decades out into the future about what are the impacts of their policies going to be and will there be adequate resources to meet the demands that we will have.
So they have to have some great strategic planning skills, the Arizona Corporation Commission.
Well, they want to make sure that at least that the utilities they're regulating are engaging in that kind of strategic planning. I know actually one of the guys who was a neighbor of mine growing up and in Boy Scouts with me is now involved in that process at APS, where he's an economist and he's projecting population trends and whatnot and usage so that it's part of APS's planning process of how many plants are we going to need, what kind of electric demands are we going to have to satisfy here. And what do we need to do to make sure we have everything that we're going to need? And what are the various kinds of resources that are available to us to meet the electric demand of the population of Arizona?
And water, too, right? The water demands.
Right. Like I said, a lot of the water demands are met by municipalities, City of Phoenix, City of Tempe, City of Mesa may be providing those services. But there's water companies, especially in the more rural areas, they tend to be smaller water companies. And those issues of planning and do we have enough water, those are real. There's parts of the state where there are some pretty serious water problems, and customers, may find that they have to go without water for periods of time. And there's time places in Gila County where they have experienced water outages and restrictions on water usage at times in the summer when there just isn't enough water to meet the demands of the community. Oftentimes it's a community where there's a lot of residential customers who are there for the weekends and trying to get out of town, and they go up into the mountains and maybe in the middle of the summer, a water company may not have all the water it really needs to meet that population boom that happens for a three-day weekend and then goes back to the valley for the rest of the work week.
So where's Arrowhead when we need them? That's the big question. Okay, so now does the Arizona Corporation Commission have the authority to impose penalties on public utilities?
They do have an authority to penalize the utilities if the utilities are not complying with the requirements that the commission has set forth. There are instances where you see that. I think really the commission and the utilities would rather see compliance than have to use that kind of a penalty after the fact. And I think that, you know, really, for the most part, the utilities are doing a great job of meeting those requirements. There may be disputes about what's the right number to put on the bill to charge the customer at the end of the day, but that's a whole different thing than the utility not actually providing the service. That's very rare that we see utilities that aren't actually able to provide the service that they need.
So there's never been a penalty imposed?
Oh, there have been. Not saying there never is, but I'm saying it's very rare that that things get to that level.
Yeah.
Usually the commission is more doing things to make sure that there will be that the utility will remain to be in compliance.
So they work with them. They're trying to work with the utilities. Now, how about environmental compliance? What's going on there with public utilities?
Well, there's a lot of concern about the impacts on the environment of things like the generation of electricity and what are the air emissions. I mean, for decades, the Environmental Protection Agency has regulated emissions from utility plants, and the costs of those of compliance with those requirements has been a part of the rates that the utility is allowed to collect. As we see increasing federal requirements, sometimes federal requirements for water, electricity, various industries, then the costs of complying with those requirements ultimately is paid by the customers. And an interesting example of that is that we saw the federal government increase the requirement. Actually, it was decrease how much arsenic was permitted in water. And there are certain places where arsenic in water exceeded the new number. It went from 50 down to 10 parts per billion. Oh. And so if there were water companies that were providing water that was, say, 40 parts per billion, previously they were in compliance. Now they're no longer in compliance. They need to do something to get in compliance, and that can be a very expensive remedy, especially for a small water company. So the commission has had to struggle with how to fairly handle the cost increases that can result from compliance with mandates from the federal government or some other entity other than the commission itself. So, people come to the commission, customers end up coming to the commission complaining about a large rate case, a rate increase, and sometimes the commission's response is, well, we didn't really have any choice but to raise those rates that amount because the utility was required to comply with a federal requirement to bring its arsenic numbers down. So
would typically, though, would the federal government or anytime there's additional environmental compliance, would there be a phase-in time to allow public utilities to catch up, or is it like abrupt and they say, hey, by next year you have to have it, and then it's a tougher situation?
I think oftentimes you'll see the federal requirements trigger at some distant point in the future to give the utility time to comply. And I think that's what happened with the arsenic requirements, that it was known several years in advance as to what the new requirement would be and when it would go into effect. But nonetheless, it still was an expensive proposition for some of the small utilities to comply with that. And there still were rate impacts that customers continue to feel because of the additional plant that needed to be put in place in order to bring arsenic numbers down.
So these utility companies really have to do their homework in what's called SWOT analysis and strategic planning, with this, which is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, especially the threat part. If you're an investor trying to invest in a public utility, you better know what may be, you better have a pulse on the federal government, you better have a pulse on state regulations, or else you might be investing in something, and that could be a tough situation if you don't know what's coming down the pipe.
Right. I mean, I think we see a lot of that as the American population is trying to guess what is the federal government going to do about certain air quality emission numbers in the future, and whether the federal government is going to make more strict some of those requirements? And if so, how will a utility need to act in order to meet its demand? I mean, is now the right time to start looking at alternative sources of energy that don't have certain air emission issues? And when is the right time to do that? How much of the demand should be met from those kinds of resources, because they at times can be more expensive, and you've got to find the right balance. And there's a sweet spot there. Nobody specifically knows where it is, but it's the commission's job to try and find it.
And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue our discussion with Scott Wakefield from Ragnauer, Hyten, and Lewis on public utilities, and we'll talk a little bit about alternative energy. That's something on everyone's mind. In fact, the Breakthrough Thinking has what's called the Green Roundtable. They'd probably be interested in having you on their show, and we'll be right back.
Ragnauer, Hyten, and Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ragnauer, Hyten, and Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Law Talk. Special in-studio guest, we have Scott Wakefield from Ragnauer, Hyten, and Lewis, and we're talking about public utilities. And I find this fascinating because all the behind-the-scenes thing, I mean, from financial to efficiency to how the really Arizona Corporation Commission really is really trying to help and work the balancing act between investors of public utilities as well as consumer rates, always a big topic.
Right. I mean, every few years when we have an election and we've got two or three of the commissioners coming up for election every 2 years, it's definitely something that is constantly in the public discussion.
Oh, I believe it. Now, alternative energy, I mean, this is huge. I mean, things are just... it's so well publicized. We have the Green Roundtable on the first Tuesday of every month from 3 to 4 on Breakthrough Thinking, and we talk about these things. We've had some really great guests. I don't know if you've ever heard of Steve Thomas, who was the Emmy Award-winning host for This Old House, a TV program, and Ed Begley Jr. He had a TV show. He's a very well-known mm-hmm. actor. He's been on. He's a very an amazing activist when it comes to green type of movement. So, but how is this all playing in? Because this is going to probably be bigger and bigger as the future unfolds. And of course, we have solar and wind. And what's going on? I know there's a mandate or at least a proposal by the Arizona Corporation Commission that by a certain year they want to see more renewable energy. Is that right?
It is a mandate the commission adopted a number of years ago. They call it the Renewable Energy Standard. And for 2011, it steps up over a number of years. For 2011, the electric companies that are subject to the rule have to meet 3% of their retail sales from certain renewable sources. and that amount increases up to 15% by 2025. And, you know, there's some who say that that number needs to go higher than that after that. At this point, that's all that the commission's rules require. Of that percent, of those percentages that the commission requires, a certain amount of it has to be met from what they call distributed energy resources, and that is generation resources that are not in a central location like we currently see. For instance, Palo Verde is a central location where there's generation of, you know, millions and billions of gigawatt hours of electricity all coming from a plant that's located in one place. With distributed energy, we have, for instance, rooftop solar is distributed. It's in the various locations where it's actually consumed by various buildings and customers. So a certain percentage of the mandate needs to be met by what they call distributed generation resources. For instance, rooftop solar is one way to meet that requirement.
And how do solar companies, there's a bunch of them, you know, in Arizona, and maybe other alternative sources, how do they deal with the public utilities? I think that would be interesting. I suspect each solar company is not regulated, but or maybe they are.
Well, it kind of would depend on how the solar company is providing its resources to the customer. If they're selling you the hardware, the physical equipment that you're going to put on your roof, then they may not be regulated by the commission. If they're going to say, we'll own a system and we'll put it on your house and we'll sell you the output from that system, but we'll own the system and we'll maintain it, well, then there's a question about whether what they're doing brings them within the purview of the commission's regulation. So there's some tricky little legal issues there about what exactly is it that the commission is permitted to regulate. And who gets to say what those things are? I mean, is that the commission's decision? Ultimately, would that be a court that would have to tell us some of those things? There's some constitutional sources to some of these debates that they get a little esoteric, but they're not easily answered questions, and they're not questions that can be clearly answered just in one day, and then everybody knows what the resolution is. Sometimes they take years to finally get a final resolution on some of these questions. But generally, if you're just putting plant up on your rooftop of your business or your home, and you're purchasing that hardware that's going up there, then the commission isn't going to regulate you. But the commission may make provisions in its tariffs for you to produce more electricity than you may need for your home at any given minute, and you can then sell back that excess electricity back to the utility company. And the questions there are, well, how much should the utility company pay you for that? Should they pay you, you know, what it costs you to produce it? What's the incremental cost of that? I mean, it's just once you have your equipment up there, it doesn't really cost you anything to generate it. You just have to have the sun shining on your roof. You know, should they pay you based on a comparison to what you're paying the utility company if you were to buy the energy instead of sell it back to them? You know, So there's all kinds of policy questions in there about where you set these rates for the costs that the utility company would have to pay a customer when they essentially sell back energy back to the utility company.
So has that been established right now?
I think the commission has established that as to what that rate is. Off the top of my head, I don't recall how they resolved that question.
So is it? Do you find it's going to be restrictive? Or is it going to be sort of an open market for these alternative energy sources? Or are they going to be running into more government compliance and regulations? Or let's say just take state of Arizona. I mean, how friendly are they to this alternative energy?
Well, you know, a lot of the political influence here in Arizona is, you know, that we want to see economic development and that this is a place where the sun shines. So maybe this is a good economic driver for us to develop a solar industry, not only to meet our own electric needs, but we could site plants here that could generate solar energy and sell it into other states. And so there's, you know, these are current questions that are being dealt with at political levels all across the state. I mean, from the legislature down to local politicians about, you know, where are the right places to site these things. What do you do about providing the high voltage electricity lines to export these resources into other states? And what kind of impacts does the siting of those lines have on the various landowners that are along those routes? I mean, is that what we want to dedicate some of our open space in Arizona to? You know, do we keep pristine open spaces that we like for recreational purposes, or to what extent can we dedicate some of those resources to putting in high voltage electric lines so we can sell solar generation into other states?
So is that dangerous, the high voltage transmission?
The lines would be the same whether you're transporting electricity that's generated by a solar line or, you know, by a solar resource or by a more conventional resource.
Oh.
I mean, of course, there's dangers with high electricity voltages, but the way they construct those things to address those risks. And so I wouldn't say that, I mean, unless you're going to illegally climb to the top of a high voltage line, I don't think you have any great risks.
I know some people we would love to climb up one of those things, but so there's not any health risk to that. It's just like if you build a housing community, it might look bad.
Right.
It's the visible aesthetic.
And then there can be impacts on maybe on wildlife. What can it do to birds? Are you going through a bald eagle habitat
or an ostrich
like that,
farm, and they don't seem to know what they're doing?
So
I heard they eat rocks, even those ostriches.
Well, you know, the commission they have authority over siting of high voltage electric lines, no matter what the source of the energy that's being transported over those lines, and so you see that even with trying to meet the demands of customers on the growing outskirts of the community, you'll see new electric lines be sited for, maybe the extreme northern part of the metropolitan Phoenix area, and the lines are sited, and then growth comes in, and maybe the line hasn't been built yet, but you've got customers moving in, and then all of a sudden there's an electric line put in, and they didn't necessarily realize that it was going to be right there, and so. There's some tensions between where do you put these electric lines and what are the other uses of the land, both right there and nearby.
Unlike a sewer place that was already there and you buy a home.
Right. Well, sometimes
that was my attempt at a joke. Okay, but no, that's it is interesting though. I think there's a misperception, I guess, that these high voltage transmission deals generate radiation. That's what I've always been told, and I thought, oh, why buy a house near there? But that's probably not true.
I'm not a scientist.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I don't think that those claims are have a lot to them.
Oh, good. This just looks sort of strange. That's what you're really saying. So, what does the future look like? 5 years from now, 10 years. We only have a minute or two minutes actually. Is it? You think that the alternative energy sources are going to make a big impact?
Well, I think you'll likely see more of our demand being met by alternative resources. And the question is, how much more of the demand and how quickly will that transition? I mean, I don't know that anyone realistically expects that we would get to the point where we would never need to rely on what we call the conventional resources of fuel and coal and things like that. But, is there some room for other resources? There's some room. What's the right number? How much of it? How quickly? Those are questions that are up for debate. But I think it's probably universally recognized among those in the area that there will be additional renewable resources that are used to meet our needs on a going forward basis.
And I think that's great. And I do agree with you. I think the politicians and the powers to be really are looking for economic development. And this is one way they can attract jobs, attract big companies, solar, alternative energy. And I think that is looks like a bright future for Arizona. Anyway, can you believe it? The time has flown already. It's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show, Scott Wakefield. Why don't you give out some contact information where they can get in touch with you?
Okay. Ridenour, Heighton & Lewis. Our phone number in Phoenix is 602 254-9900. And my email is sswakefield@rhkl-law.com.
That sounds like a battleship, SS Wakefield. I don't know. I thought that I'd throw that in. Anyway, thank you so much. This has been really enlightening.
Thanks for
having me, Dave. Oh, absolutely. And very interesting. And stay tuned now for Understanding Autism with Kimberly Isaac and Paul Alden. And we'll be right back.
FamilyValuesRadio.net.
1010 KXXT.
Tolleson, Phoenix.